Hello, Own Your Career podcast audience. On today's episode, we have Jordan Cutler. Jordan Cutler is a software engineer, or as we used to call him, SWEE, S-W-E. And he is a young whippersnapper, as I refer to him. He's 4 years out of school, although he's been working 6 years because he busted his ass in college. And he has lots of wise advice on how especially engineers, more technical people, can grow and accelerate their careers. So it's a great conversation we had. We talk a lot about how to frame and brand yourself with others, how to grow and improve on things. We talked about him improving on his SATs, me improving on my SATs. And we really just talked about how to take proactive ownership of your career and your path. So I think you'll enjoy this. And before we enter this podcast, I just want to remind you that if you are looking for an opportunity to get a better job, to get more interviews, to get more offers, and to make more money, we at Kadima Careers help you. We help you three different ways. We provide personalized coaching services where we guarantee to get you a job. You have to apply. We take a small number of people, but you will work with us until you get a better job, and we will help you negotiate the offer. If you prefer a lower touch opportunity, there are group coaching offerings as well, where you work with us for 6 months with a group and with a community and all the support that you need. And if you're more of a do-it-yourself person, we do offer a digital course as well, the Job Acquisition Method, where you will learn our six-step growth framework to get more interviews, get more offers, and make more money. So I'm going to leave you with the last three words that I always do: own your career. Welcome to another episode of the Own Your Career podcast. Today, I am very excited to have a young whippersnapper, as I would call him, because compared to my old ass who just turned 50, Jordan has about 4 to 6 years of experience. And Jordan Cutler, I met, like I meet most people, on LinkedIn. He talks a lot about careers and accelerating careers, especially for engineers. I was pretty impressed with what he said. He's wise beyond his years. So with that, Jordan, welcome to the Own Your Career podcast, and I'd love to hear a little bit more about you.
Thanks for having me, man. Super excited to be here. Super excited to chat with you, Alan. Alan and I, we did a event, I think it was about a month and a half ago, on how to get interviews, land more offers, negotiate a higher salary, and there was a ton of great lessons in there. Turned it into a newsletter post. So I'm excited to also do this collaboration with you, Alan. It's going to be a great time.
Talk through your career about what you've done to this point.
My first intro into kind of like real world software engineering was about a sophomore to junior year in college in 2017. So that was about 6 years ago now. And that's when I was working at a crypto startup called Dolomite, based on a little bit off the Dolomite Mountains in Italy, if you heard of those. Our logo was actually like a mountain and everything. Maybe in the mountain, there's crypto or something like that. Might have been, I forget the exact concept, but that was like a 5-person startup with the alumni of the university that I went to. A really smart guy. And that's where I literally built crypto exchange from the ground up. It's now at, I think, like 2 million in like monthly trade volume or something like that. I mean, I'm far removed from it now, but you know, hey, I helped. At the same time, I was kind of doing Twitter internships as well in between on the summers. Second Twitter internship was, I was doing both at the same time, which I learned, after the fact that was a mistake. And I could talk more about that later. After graduating in 2019, wanted to try something else, get something a little bit more stable than a seed stage crypto startup as my first job. So I looked around and I came across Gusto and did interviews at a good amount of places. Gusto was one of the ones that really excited me. It seemed like there was a ton of great opportunity, a really solid culture. I really loved the pair programming and like collaboration aspect. There was also No Shoes in the office as well, which was really a standout trait of the culture. The office, by the way, is so cool. It's you could still look it up. Like if you search like Gusto office, you're basically you work in a construction site
barefoot. barefooted in a construction site. That's exactly what we say.
Yeah. And I stayed there for 3 years, did a ton of awesome things there, and came across an opportunity through one of my mentees at Gusto, who left, joined a company called Qualified, Series C stage, and, you know, chatted with the folks there, interviewed, and it had a lot of, you know, awesome opportunities, I think, inside of the role, and a lot more, I'd say, ownership over like a large portion of the product. So I've been there for a year and a half now, and it's been an awesome time. So yeah, that's pretty much the career journey.
So Qualified you got because a mentee that you mentored at Gusto went over there, so kind of like referred in.
Exactly.
Because of who you knew. It sounded like your job at Dolomite was through a Lehigh connection. Yep. You went to Lehigh undergrad, so it was like an alum that either you knew or you
exactly,
built a relationship
yeah.
with.
Yeah.
And how about the Twitter roles? How'd you get the Twitter job?
The Twitter one, I was basically doing a summer, or it might have been a winter, of just applying everywhere. It was one of those where they had the site, I think I remember it was called like intern.supply or something. There was like 200 sites and 200 companies to just apply to everywhere. I was doing leak coding. I changed my video game addiction to a leak code addiction. And for a short period of time, I just ended up getting lucky, I suppose, with the interview opportunity. They sent me a hacker rank. And at that point, that's when they were doing those like take home ones. I don't know if they still do it now, but, you know, through the practice, that doing well in the hacker rank, I think got me the interview.
Cool. And Gusto, how'd you get that job?
Gusto, that one was kind of similar, actually. It was Wealthfront top 100 career launching companies list. Applied to every single one on the menu. And Gusto was one of the ones that reached out. I hadn't heard of it before that list. But when I checked it out, I mean, it was the one that honestly, it was like most exciting out of all those like 100. And luckily they gave me an opportunity. I was actually failing the majority of my interviews up until that point of kind of interviewing with Gusto. The way that Gusto's interview process, it was a breath of fresh air compared to some of the other ones. There was literally only one leak code style interview and that one. And the other ones were all kind of much more like collaborative pair programming type ones. And so it just really stood out to me. And that one, it was an interview process that jived insanely well compared to the other ones.
So I've interviewed about 2,000 times myself. I've probably interviewed about 1,000 plus people at some big tech companies as well. I've never interviewed people on the for technical roles. I have managed TPMs, technical program managers, but I never did a technical evaluation. For those listening in our podcast universe here, you talked about lead code, you talked about HackerRank. Can you share a little bit about what those are? And I think you might be my first SWE, my software, software engineer on our podcast. But talk a little about those HackerRank, LeetCode, and the idiosyncrasies. And you may not know that they're idiosyncrasies because mm-hmm. you've always been doing SWE, like software engineer interviews. But talk a little bit about those two things.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, so the LeetCode and HackerRank are essentially the SAT study platforms for getting a tech job. You know how if you took the SATs, you kind of had to like study for the SAT, you know, you didn't just have to like kind of know certain things and hope that your, you know, knowledge would sort of speak for itself. There was the 2400 scale for me. My first SAT score was, I think, around like a 1200. Out of the 2400 scale. Right. I'm kid you not. It was like a 12, like literally like a 50%. Like I was terrible. And after studying for it, I think I worked my way up to the 1700 and then a 1900. It's basically the same process. And the reason why I describe it like that is because I would probably fail most LeetCode interviews right now, even though I'm a senior software engineer. I mean, I don't know if I would fail, but I might not get like a strong yes. I might have a hard time kind of coming up with the solution. I'll be able to be good at like talking through it and stuff like that and follow the process that you're normally supposed to. But a lot of software engineers, they need to spend, if they want to decide to career switch or just get their first job, they need to spend 3 months, you know, a lot of time, I'd say on average, just practicing for the LeetCode interview, which is just like a very specific style interview. You know, you end up solving these problems that you never do on the job. And so it's easy to get out of practice for them, essentially. And so that's why when I got the Twitter one, when I got the Gusto one, that's what I was doing. I was grinding, you know, really hard on those platforms.
It's all a learnable skill. Kind of like a lot of the interview skills that I teach people, we teach people at Kadima Careers, it is learnable. And you talk about how you help people get jobs, to land great job offers, to land an intern return offer. What advice do you have for, especially like landing the job, besides studying for LeetCode? Was that the only thing? If you pass LeetCode, you're in, but or are there other factors at play?
There's definitely a lot of other factors for sure. You can't just know how to solve the LeetCode problem either. Even if you were this expert and you got a problem during the interview and you were just like, all right, done. And then you submit it and it works. You might pass, but I mean, the interviewer probably wouldn't have enjoyed that experience. I'd say 50% of the time you would actually probably fail, especially if you didn't communicate at all and you just typed in your answer and submitted, got perfect score, you would still fail. The reason why is because that's not all they care about. They care that you're going to be someone that is going to work well on the team, right? That's not what you're doing. You're not just typing up some code and then merging and then, you know, you don't talk to anyone during your workday. So that's not what they're going to give you a pass or fail on either. So yeah, you need to really show that you have the communication skills, one, to talk through, you know, your solution, thinking through the problem, how you break the problem down. That's just for the LeetCode alone, but for the behavioral side as well, you need to show that you're someone that's going to be easy to work with. If you get a question like, tell me about a time you had a disagreement, and you say, oh yeah, I could give you 20 of those. I have disagreements all the time. And the one that I had the other day, I just flipped the coworker off. Off, you know, like good luck getting that job offer, you know. So there's so many things that can go wrong during the interview process that are not just LeetCode for sure.
So you're about like 6 years of experience, including the time that you were working at Dolomite while also at Lehigh. And you worked at Twitter, you worked at Dolomite, you worked at Gusto, you worked at Qualified. I know you're doing some stuff on your own as well. 4 companies. 6 years, or maybe 4 years since graduation, whatever you want to consider it. I look at that as a positive. Some people look at that as, ooh, Jordan's a job hopper. How have you thought about that at all? And how have you thought about the decisions that you've made to move around fairly often in your early career?
I think I'm still early in my career, so I am still figuring out what is the type of environment that I work best in. I feel like you can't really answer that question unless you try it. You know, I can't say that I love the big tech environment or don't like it if I never actually worked there and tried it myself, which I got a little bit of an experience of, I think, at Twitter, but it probably would be something to try out like at some point in the future again, too. I think with Gusto, the situation was that I had been there for 3 years. I had a good amount of different types of experience, full stack. I tried front end a good amount. I did, you know, projects that kind of span like across the org. But I also felt like I had a pretty solid understanding of the process, like, you know, just the way that the culture worked, that all the teams work, the processes that we work with. And I figured I really liked my first year at Gusto, probably the most out of all 3 years, when it was actually Series C size. Qualified was a little bit smaller. And I figured, well, you know, Qualified is the same series number, but also a bit smaller. And I know that I love that like environment where I just feel like I can make a ton of impact. And it seemed like, you know, that's what they were going for. And so I figured I would just give it a go. Was there at Gusto for 3 years. I think if a company is going to say, you know, you're job hopping, like if you've been there for 3 years, I mean, to me, that's loyalty, you know, if anything, you know, being there for 3 years. If you look at those charts of the tenure at the FANG companies, a lot of times it's in the like 1 to 2 year range. To me, I was like, yeah, I should be all good from that perspective. But I can say that I have seen cases where recruiters do get concerned if you list off that you've been at maybe 3 to 4 places all 1 year back to back or less than 1 year even.
Right.
And it could have even been that you did it for a contracting experience. But if you don't make that clear, then they might get somewhat concerned. And it's just something to be on the lookout for and think about. But don't get hung up on it if you have good reason either.
And on the side, like you're someone who likes to be quite active. You're qualified and you're also leading a course, a Maven course on high growth engineering, right?
Like, yes.
Talk about that. What impact are you trying to deliver for the people that are taking that course? What are they joining that course for? What are they trying to achieve?
To give a bit more context to that, I currently run a newsletter. I started 7 months ago. It's called High Growth Engineer. And crazy world that it is, I don't know how, but we've reached 26,000 subscribers. It's insane to me. I would have thought maybe I could have got 1,000 by the end of the year. And it's skyrocketed. It's been amazing. I'm continuing to push on that. The thing is, though, is that there's kind of like different levels of like content, right? You know, like there's Twitter, right? And there's this person that kind of inspiring my talk from, which they have this thing. It's called the content hierarchy of bullshit. And it's from West Cal. And so like there's different levels of content, right? There's Twitter. And I kind of put that like at the bottom, which is like, there's these like little short, like one-liner things. They don't really have much, you know, substance or nuance to them. You know, if you need to get into more detail, you need to give like a 30 message long, like tweet thread, basically.
Yeah.
And still you might be missing some stuff. Then, you know, as you get higher and higher, you kind of go into like articles, maybe like a book, courses, stuff like that. And I'm kind of in the middle, right, with my articles. My articles give good, solid info on a single topic, like how to handle disagreements with your coworkers. And you get a really nice bite-sized thing you can just take with you. And it's like, okay, these are some things that I can think about like when I have a disagreement with someone. But if you want to talk about something bigger, like going from mid-level to senior engineer, which is what my course is about, then you kind of need like a plan, right? Like a path. And that is what the course is meant to do. It's kind of meant to give you that whole structure of, all right, if you're at mid-level, these are likely the things that you're experiencing. These are the things that you need to learn. And we're going to do like a walkthrough of all those. And it's going to be highly interactive too. I'm not going to just do lecture style. I absolutely hate those. Every single presentation that I've ever given, like at work, never had zero interaction. It's always some form. Doesn't matter if it's to 5 people, doesn't matter if it's to 200 people, there will be like some form of interaction. This one is probably going to have the most interaction, like of any type of thing. And I'm going to be teaching the 5 skills, essentially, that they need to grow to senior engineer. There might be some other things they can still grow on, of course. But I'm going to be covering the 5 major skills, I think, that would take anyone from mid-level to senior.
What are those 5 skills?
Those 5 are leading projects effectively, becoming an expert on your team or known as an expert, working with your manager better and getting them to advocate for you, mentoring other engineers, and writing senior level code.
Cool. On the engineering track, I've always worked well with engineers. I'm not an engineer by trade, but I've always worked effectively with engineers. I find them to typically be more logical, more merit-driven. And a lot of things that you're talking about there on leading projects, being an expert on the team, writing code, working with your manager and mentoring, that's a little bit softer.
Mm-hmm.
But 3 of those 5 things are kind of hard skills. How much do you think the hard skills come into play? And like, I've worked in businesses where hard skills matter too. I worked on customer acquisition, like in sales, and you got to meet your numbers, or on operations, and you had to reduce your cost to serve or the speed to resolve something. So we were measured on that, but we also had working with your manager, supporting other people. I always found that on the engineering side, the hard skills, the more merit-driven, were counted more, but there's probably politics at play too. And I don't know how much you've seen this in your career. I don't know if you've been part of calibration sessions yet for promotions and promotion committees.
It's on my bucket list.
So after you get into that, you'll be like, why the fuck did I want to get into this? I've been through 35 calibrations, and some of them are interesting. Some of them, like, bring your popcorn. Some of them are just political catfights and painful and positioning of people. I don't know, like, how much of a perspective you have, like, 4 to 6 years in your career and only in the engineering field. My impression as an outsider and working with engineers is it's more of a meritocracy. And you're also newer in your career. And I think early in my career, I thought people that do well will get treated well.
Mm-hmm.
As you're dealing with clients, as you're dealing with people that you teach, as you're exposed to the area, dealing with more senior level engineers, do you think my hypothesis is correct that engineering's maybe a bit more or a lot more merit-based?
It's a solid question, man. I think engineers often fall into a trap. Early on in their career, the hard skills do matter more. But then they think that that is what will keep continuing to matter, right? You know, as you become to senior, as you maybe go into manager role or get to the staff level, or you're trying to, right? But you're focusing on those hard skills and you're like, man, I'm coding so much. You know, I'm putting in all these hours. I'm shipping all these projects. Why am I not getting promoted? Why is my work not getting recognized, right? It's so easy to fall into that trap, because it is true. When you are a junior engineer and you could show that you ship code really well, they're going to promote you to mid-level fast. That's what happened to me. Same thing for senior. I mean, it starts to matter a little bit more, you know, the soft skills as you get into a senior role. But if you can really show that you're like able to crank out code, lead those projects and ship them on time, then you'll get promoted to senior pretty quick too. But after that, the code stops to matter a lot more. There are certain archetypes, I will say, like at the FANG companies, at Meta, there's a coding machine archetype, you know? So if you want to go that route, you know, I'm not sure every company will support that, but I think Meta does. Of course, even so, right? You still can't be just a person that, you know, sits in the corner and is literally a coding machine. I'm sure there's a little bit more to the coding machine than that name. But yeah, it definitely starts to matter a lot more. You need to start to be able to influence across teams, work with your manager a lot better and explain your impact that you're making. And there's even a book. It's called What Got You Here Won't Get You There.
Yep.
And so it's literally the same thing. It's like, okay, you got to senior doing a certain set of things. What got you here is not going to get you to the next place that you want to go. It's something that I think a lot of people probably end up experiencing and needing to learn the hard way throughout their career.
Where did you get promoted? Was that Gusto or multiple places?
My two promotions were at Gusto, and I got hired in qualified at the same level.
So I'm looking at your LinkedIn profile, and it says Gusto, senior software engineer from 2019 to 2021 for financial products, and senior software engineer design systems. Was it both called senior software engineer, or was one like senior software engineer one, senior software engineer mm-hmm. two?
I joined at Gusto as a entry level. And then after my first year, I got promoted once. And then after my second year, I got promoted the second time. Yes. And then I've just basically been senior ever since. And, you know, the next step for me is to get to staff.
Your first role at Gusto, what was your title?
They don't have titles necessarily, but it's L1, L2, L3, L4. And they would refer to L3s as senior, and they would refer to L4 as staff.
So you went from L1 to L2 to L3.
Yep.
My recommendation on your LinkedIn profile, make sure that's abundantly clear. Because looking at that, it looks like a lateral move. But in fact, you got promoted twice in 3 years, which is quite impressive.
I think I can do that. I think last time I might have been confused by the LinkedIn interface little bit, to where like I can make it look clean and still do that. But yeah, I'll look into seeing if we could do that.
Yeah, because a lot of recruiters and hiring managers, like I know we did this at Google and Facebook and uh-huh. Salesforce. That's a key element that people look at, is the trajectory.
Yeah. So
they're like, okay, this guy was at Gusto for 3 years. It looks like he just moved laterally. But talking to you,
got it.
Like, man, this guy got promoted twice in 3 years. That's quite impressive.
Exactly.
You can do it if you want. That's your call.
No, I totally believe you. And it's something that like I've thought about too. It's also on the resume too. It's sometimes hard to show those things on the resume.
So you also talk a lot about negotiation. You help people with negotiations. I'm curious some of your tactics with that. What's either worked for you? What's worked with people that you've helped? I just did a talk recently on it. So I'd love to trade some tips and tricks on how you've helped yourself and others get paid what they're worth.
I don't think I'm at the stage where I can talk explicit numbers, but I can say what the strategies that have worked for me.
Yeah, let's talk more tactics than the numbers.
Well, actually, I tried to negotiate my Gusto offer and it didn't work because they had a flat. This is a case for a lot of places where for entry levels, they just have one, you know, number that they'll just give to everyone, because I think there's like not really much to base off of in terms of, okay, yeah, like well, we could give you more.
You know, and you were hired right out of college for that, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's typically what's called like a bulk hire. So when they hire in bulk, if you don't take it, they'll just hire someone else at Lafayette or someone else at Penn or someone else, whatever other schools they're looking at.
Yeah. So the only time that I negotiated and it was successful was from Gusto to qualified. I can share a couple of techniques there. The first thing for me, I tried to be as conversational and transparent while also being carefully transparent, I will say. You should only share things that will still maintain your best interest at hand, but also showing that you're trying to make something work with them. I know it's probably confusing, so I need to think a little bit more on an example. Maybe you have one that comes to mind too, where you can help fill me in. But that's generally the process, like high level thinking that goes into mine. And then from there, it's all about if you have additional leverage, what are the levers that you can pull from? And so a couple of different ones are like whether you have other offers. But a lot of people don't think that this other case too, whereas like the other lever you could pull is you have upcoming interviews. You know, it doesn't need to just be that you have another offer. They might want you to sign right then and there, right? And so if you know, let's say that you interviewed first with the company you want most, you have another interview for a company that you probably don't really care that, you know, that much about, but you would still be down to interview with them. You could say to the company that you just got the offer from, I'm so excited, you know, about like the offer and the opportunity with you guys. I have an upcoming interview with this other company, you know, next week, but honestly, I would love it if I could just take your guys' offer. The thing is I'm still thinking about that opportunity, but what would get me to sign right now is if we could go to X amount in the equity number or the cash number or whatever. And that's like much easier for them to go back, say, oh, hey, look, you know, we really want Jordan to sign. He literally said that he's going to sign if we get him this number. So let's give him this. Get the sign and, you know, go in. They just spent $50,000 interviewing you, you know, for going through the interview process and, you know, all the money that they're going to have to pay the next person and all that. So they don't want to lose you. So if you could just use any lever possible, then that's generally the one that's worked well for me in my experience. Didn't even need other offers.
And there's no downside. So you mentioned like you tried negotiating with Gusto. They're like, no, we're not paying you more, but they didn't retract the offer.
Right. Exactly.
There was no risk of retraction of the offer because you asked for more. And Gusto and Qualified, they're both private companies, right? Dolomite as well.
Yeah. Yep. All private. Yep.
So you've probably got options. You don't need to go into the, but you probably got options at both of them. But how do you go about thinking about the value of the options that you got in? And when you leave Gusto, you had to decide, I guess, if you were going to exercise them or not.
Gusto was a unique situation. Gusto does a really cool thing. I guess they wouldn't do it anymore because they do RSUs now. But
are they public now or?
No, but you know, at some stage they just end
up like once you get RSUs. Close to public, if you know, you think RSUs have like a 3-year shelf life. So if you think that you're going to IPO within 3 years, you can offer RSUs, I believe.
Yeah, exactly. I got options, but they have this cool thing. It's like a 3-year rule. If you stay for 3 years, then your options will not expire if you leave the company for 10 years. Okay. So I have a bunch of options that are still just sitting there. I didn't exercise them and I'm waiting, you know, for if they ever go public, then I'll exercise.
Right. Cause sometimes you have to like exercise and then pay cash for them. As you're negotiating your offer with mm-hmm. Gusto or Qualify, like how do you go about valuing it? I'll tell you simply how I value uh-huh. it. I assume zero. For
startup, I a lot of people zero. Do. A lot of people do.
And especially if you're not a founder, you're not a seed level, you're not getting like a percentage of the company, even there, you're likely to get diluted and the exit may not come depending on how late stage your company is. Like if you're going to like a Stripe or a Gong where like, I think they'll definitely go public, you're fine. When you took the Qualified offer, if you negotiated with them for options or how do you think about the value of options?
Yeah. To your point, I don't value them much, but I value them something. I mean, something is better than, you know, nothing.
Yeah.
And oh,
yeah.
you're not necessarily getting zero. So I try to capitalize on the cash amount first for private companies. I think especially early in my, you know, career where it's just that difference in like cash just makes a huge difference. And not only that, but it's additional negotiating leverage for the next offer as well. So if you, let's say, have the choice between $200K cash and $50,000 worth of options versus $150K cash and quadruple that in options, you know, $200,000 in options, I would still take the $200K in cash because let's say, you know, you're off, like the job doesn't really work out in a year, you're not happy. You want to go looking for another place, another company, not going to care that you have 200K in options. They will care that you have 200K in cash and they'll try to match you as much as possible or raise it. So I try to go just max out on whatever their cash number is. And then after that, then, you know, go for the options if you still want a little more.
And RSUs, I consider differently, and I consider them almost as good as cash. They're just cash bonuses. I take a year, 2 years, 3 years, 4 years to cash out.
Yep, exactly.
Cool, Jordan. Well, we're running low on time, so I have a couple more questions for you. What is one piece of sick career advice that you would like to share with our audience here?
My answer to this is normally just constantly be self-aware and reflective and focus on your growth, understand where the areas are that you need, you know, to get to the next level. But I will differ it a little bit because I'm excited to talk about probably what I'm going to share on this coming week's newsletter a little bit more, which is something I've been thinking about a little bit. And it's the concept of framing. Like I've noticed myself talk and say that word a lot more recently as I've, you know, become a bit more senior. And it's essentially like, okay, you have a bunch of words and ideas and they're jumbled up right in your head and they're all over the place. You have a bunch of this, but what if when you present it to someone, right, you put it in a little picture frame. And when you show them that picture frame, it's exactly the thing that they're looking for, that makes sense to them. And it's such an important skill, I think, like in software engineering, to be able to do that effectively. Why am I telling the person this thing? What am I trying to get out of it? And what do they care about? Knowing that, then how do I present it in a way to get that the best possible? It could be an interview. When someone asks you the disagreement question, you interpret it as, oh, this person wants to know about when I had a disagreement. No, they want to know that you can handle a disagreement well, right? You frame it in that way. Or it could be your resume. You could be thinking about your resume as, I would think everyone wants to know because I can show off that I know all this random stuff. And then the recruiter reads it and they're like, I don't understand a single thing on this on this piece of paper. And so it's like, I think a lot of people kind of, they probably know this concept like internally and apply it, you know, sparsely here and there. But I think putting it at the forefront of a lot of the things you do and a lot of your writing or communication is just incredibly important. Probably what I'm calling actually the most important skill for every software engineer in my article. Feel free to give me a contrarian point of a different skill but I will for now stick with that being the most important. And that's what I would like to leave everyone with.
Yeah, like I think framing, I think branding yourself, communicating effectively, your career is essentially sales and marketing in order to like move up in your career. And it's how you communicate your value, how you communicate to others, communication is not what you say, it's what people hear. So if you can frame it in a way that they can grok it and understand it, you're going to just be much more efficient and effective in getting across your point.
Exactly. Yep. Totally agree, man.
Cool. And then the last question, Jordan, I think I know this, but how can people follow you and how can people support you?
So on LinkedIn, search for Jordan Cutler. It's Jordan Cutler 1 is the URL like thing. Unfortunately, there's some other Jordan Cutler out there. I think he's like a CPA or something. And funny, I think I wanted to be a CPA. So it's like a different version of me, but yeah, mine is Jordan Cutler 1, and you could check out my newsletter as well. High Growth Engineer. The URL is, I need to get this fixed, but it's Career Cutler, Substack. It's High Growth Engineer. And then, yeah, if you're interested in the course that I have upcoming, follow me on those platforms and you'll find out about it. You could join the wait list right now as well, but I'll be posting about it too.
Awesome, Jordan. Well, I've really appreciated getting to know you. I enjoyed that LinkedIn Live we did. This is a great conversation. And I really appreciate that you have proactively owned your career.
Thank you so much, Alan. It was a pleasure being here, man. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Jordan.
That wraps up another remarkable episode of the Sick Career Podcast with Alan Stein. Check out past episodes and other resources on the website. That's sickpodcast.com, and it's S-Y-C-K. Alan, tell the audience about the newsletter they can sign up for.
The newsletter rocks. Check out the accelerator, XLR8R. You will get great tips about your career. You'll get honest insights. You'll get the occasional pet picture. And you will learn how to take proactive control and take charge of your career.
Very good. Very good. That's sickpodcast.com, S-Y-C-K. For your host, Alan Stein, I'm Russ Reba. And we hope you've enjoyed today's episode. You are going to love the next one.